Morning, everyone.
Morning.
We haven't had any snow yet this year. So I don't know. Doesn't feel quite like the holiday season yet. Somehow, it doesn't feel very wintry, but you never know. In recent years, I've made something of a tradition of talking about joy in the week or two before Christmas. I grew up in the Christian tradition. I sang all those old Christmas carols. Joy to the world, tidings of comfort and joy. And that joy is in response to the birth of a child, right? There's something archetypal about that. You know, new birth, new life coming into the world. And then that's layered in with the return of light with the winter solstice. The turning of the season. And of course, the Christmas carols aren't about just the birth of any child, but a holy child who is prophesied to redeem sinful humankind. But isn't any newborn child a holy child? Though not all newborns are greeted with joy. And sadly, for too many people, the holidays are not such a joyful time. For some, loneliness, grief, or the distress of family conflict or estrangement are even more painful when you're surrounded by messages of merriment and festivity. For other people, all the frantic busyness of the holidays doesn't allow much room for real joy, and the frantic consumption and buying and advertising seem to crowd out joy rather than nourish joy. And for some, the seemingly endless days of rain and darkness can make it hard to feel joyful. So there's sort of an irony, you know, in the message of joy at times. So I like to talk about what joy means or happiness means in the context of our practice. When we chant the Metta Sutta, which we will shortly, we chant, "May all beings be happy, may they be joyous and live in safety." So what is it we're wishing for all beings? We usually associate happiness with getting what we want, right? Opening that wrapping paper and saying, "Oh, just what I wanted." You know? Just what I always wanted. Except so often it isn't. Or it's not exactly what you wanted. Or that excitement of getting what you wanted is short-lived, right? It's always short-lived. It's always transient. It lasts until the first dent, the first malfunction, or a new version comes out. I remember when I was a hospice counselor, and I had a support group for teenagers. It was the only successful teen support group. And I remember when the holidays, they all came back after the holidays, and they're comparing the new cell phones that they got. And one guy, in this moment, he had been so excited about his new cell phone, and he saw that the other guy had the more recent version, and he just like turned in a split second to disappointment. Or the first argument in a new exciting relationship. Oh. So we relocate happiness. We relocate happiness in the land of the future, right? The land of if only. The other side of the fence where grass is greener and more lush. This is obviously not the happiness the Buddha was talking about. So what is it? A sense of well-being? An elusive sense of feeling at home and content in our lives as they are, in our bodies as they are? What is it? How does it feel? Even if in a moment that sense of dissatisfaction drops away. That moment of freedom. And sometimes it lasts for a while. The moment of feeling connected to our lives as they are. And to the world as it is. The conventional meaning of freedom in our everyday lives and society is freedom to do whatever you want. Or freedom from responsibility or obligation. Freedom to or freedom from. We don't really have a concept of freedom that goes beyond that. So what does true freedom feel like? Can you imagine it? Can you recall a time when you felt it, even briefly? Was there joy there? Was there a sense of joy? What about joy? The Buddha taught that joy is one of the four Brahma Viharas, or noble abodes, known in Tibetan Buddhism as the four immeasurables, which I also like, because they are immeasurable in their limitless practices. Metta, or loving kindness, karuna, compassion, upekkha, equanimity, and mudita, joy. These are the Pali language words. And mudita basically means gladness. Something, and it's been called, you know, gladdening the heart, the feeling of gladness in the heart. And it's often translated as sympathetic or empathetic joy, referring to the happiness or joy that we feel in the happiness and well-being of others. It's just not just our own getting what we want. And when you think about it, empathy is necessary for both compassion and joy. In compassion, we feel another's pain. In mudita, we feel another's happiness and well-being as our own, just like our own. We feel another's exuberant life force, you know, like when you see children playing, if they're not hitting each other and grabbing toys from each other, but, you know, or a child happily playing on their own, you know. We can feel a kind of joy in witnessing that, right? I think that our capacity for both, for feeling another's pain or for feeling another's joy, is dependent on our capacity to be fully present with our own pain or our own joy. The traditional meditative practice of mudita focuses first on the happiness of others. So you begin by calling to mind a dear friend, someone in whose happiness we can easily feel joy. And then a benefactor, someone who's been nourishing to you in some way, and then a neutral person, and then a difficult person. So how do you feel joy in the well-being of a difficult person? That's tougher. and then all beings. And typically in these practices, the Brahma Viharas practices, you actually use a phrase or several phrases, short phrases, and repeat them silently to yourself on the rhythm of your breath. So a traditional phrase for joy would be, may your happiness and well-being continue. And you don't have to say the whole phrase, you can just use the felt sense of that or just a simple word if the words get in the way. So we don't have time today to actually do that practice, but I would encourage you to explore that practice in the context of the other Brahma Viharas of loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, and joy, because they are quite synergistic, I would say. They really support each other and balance each other. But I want to go a little bit in a different direction today with talking about joy. So bear with me. Joy is akin to happiness, I think. Joy, it's not a manic, let's party kind of happiness, but a quiet sense of well-being and connection to our own life, to others, to the world around us. And joy is also akin to wonder. The world is full of wonders. If we, you know, open up our field of awareness from our narrow self-concern. Some of you know there's a kind of hummingbird that stays all winter. Our typical hummingbirds are called rufous hummingbirds, and they leave the end of August and go to Mexico. But there's another kind called Anna's hummingbirds, and they've been expanding their range in recent years, further north, probably because of climate change. And they just arrived at our house, because we're a little bit up on the mountainside out between Maple Ridge and Mission. They just arrived at our place about 4 years ago. And to me, to see a hummingbird at the feeder with snow coming down, it's just the most amazing thing. I mean, they make me happy just any time they're there. Every morning, there they are. It's just hardly getting light. They're the first birds up, and they're at that feeder. And knowing the science behind these wonders does not make them any less wondrous. Oh, I forgot to look this up. But I learned a while ago that a chickadee can remember something like a couple of hundred different locations of where it caches seeds for later use. A tiny little bird with a memory that surpasses ours when it comes to where we put things. And knowing that just fills me with wonder and delight. And learning, as I recently did from a book that Michael's reading called The Water Book. Oh, I didn't write down.
I can't remember either. I already know.
It's all about water, but particularly the movements of water. Anyway, I learned that, correct me if I'm wrong, excuse me, that the intensity of the red in a rainbow indicates the size of the droplets. Bigger droplets, more intense red. And that's wondrous. You know, that just gave me this little moment, right? Wow. And that's just as wondrous as believing that a rainbow is some kind of god, right? There's something elemental about joy. There's a poem from the Inuit oral tradition that I've loved for years. I couldn't find the original translation that I first discovered a couple decades ago. But I found another version by the poet Jane Hirschfield. The great sea frees me, moves me, as a strong river carries a weed. Earth and her strong winds move me, take me away, and my soul is swept up in joy. And then I'm going to read you a more contemporary expression of the elemental quality of joy. This is by Edward Hirsch, The Widening Sky. I am so small walking on the beach at night under the widening sky. The wet sand quickens beneath my feet and the waves thunder against the shore. I am moving away from the boardwalk with its colorful streamers of people and the hotels with their blinking lights. The wind sighs for hundreds of miles. I am disappearing so far into the dark, I have vanished from sight. I am a tiny seashell that has secretly drifted ashore and carries the sound of the ocean surging through its body. I am so small now, no one can see me. How can I be filled with such a vast love? Maybe you've had an experience, something like that. Some dropping away of self-focus, opening to vastness. This is what I'm calling elemental joy. The feeling of being vividly alive in the world. And it transcends conventional distinctions between the beautiful and the ugly, the pleasant and the unpleasant. Michael and I spent a few days out on the west coast of Vancouver Island this past week. We just got back day before yesterday. And we walked one day a short distance on the Juan de Fuca Trail. It was like today, a gray, dank, rainy day. So we set out with our umbrellas because we are not the proud owners of proper Gore-Tex rain gear. So on the way, the umbrellas were kind of like walking sticks because it was not really raining. And as soon as we got to the beach, it was called Mystic Beach, it started to rain. And the tide was so high we couldn't even get on the beach to walk. So we sat on a stump for a while with our umbrellas and watched the waves crash in, big waves, and crashing against the cliffs further down. And we just watched and watched. And that wonderful sound as the wave withdraws and the music of the pebbles. Right? But it started raining harder. And our bums were getting wet, so we set out back up the trail, which was steep and rooty and slippery and lots of big puddles to work your way around, and steps and boardwalks. And so this time we were carrying our umbrellas because it was raining harder and harder. And you might think that would be a miserable thing to do. But it became a kind of dance with the rain, and you have to tip the umbrella to get between two trees, and the trees are, you know how those coastal trees are so twisty, and you know the trunks sometimes split and bend in wild ways, and the moving really carefully because I didn't want to turn an ankle, became a kind of dance in the rain with the roots and the puddles and the rain. And there was joy in moving the body through the rain. So we can see this kind of elemental joy most often in the very young and the very old. You know, an old cat stretching out in a patch of sunlight on a carpet in the winter. Or once we saw a pair of bear cubs rolling and tumbling in our backyard, just like puppies. And you've probably seen crows or ravens doing aerobatics on the currents and the wind. And it looks like just for the joy of it, right? And it's infectious to witness that kind of joy. You feel it. Almost like your little wings are twitching between your shoulder blades, right? I think when we experience this kind of elemental joy, it becomes easier to extend our sphere of awareness and concern to our fellow problematic, flawed human beings, and to sincerely wish them joy and well-being. Yeah. I was reviewing the words of the old Christmas carol, "Joy to the World." The Lord has come, let earth receive her King. And I thought maybe in our world today the time has come not to look for a second coming or a Messiah or a Savior or Redeemer or even a future Buddha to bail us out, or not to mention extraterrestrial beings to save us from our greed, hatred, and ignorance, but rather to recognize deeply that it's our shared responsibility to awaken and take care of each other and to take care of this beautiful earth upon which our lives depend. And it's our shared responsibility to cultivate the capacity to meet, as the Taoists say, the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows that life brings. Then I looked, even in that old Christmas carol, there was some recognition that we do this with all beings. We do it with the whole earth. The one verse goes, "Joy to the world, the Savior reigns, let men, people their songs employ, while fields and floods, rocks, hills, and plains repeat the sounding joy, repeat the sounding joy." I remember loving those lines, you know, even as a kid. "While fields and floods, rocks, hills, and plains repeat the sounding joy." And that carol, as it turns out, those words were based on the 98th Psalm. "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all the earth. Make a loud noise and rejoice and sing praise. Sing unto the Lord with the harp and the voice of a psalm. With trumpets and sound of cornet, make a joyful noise before the Lord, the King. Let the sea roar and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. Let the floods clap their hands, let the hills be joyful together." The poetry of the King James Version. Now, some of you may recall that our teacher, Norman Fisher, about 20 years ago, undertook to write Zen-inspired versions of the Psalms. And this is the book that he published with those versions. That didn't entirely solve the problem of some of the language, and he says this in his introduction, that he couldn't entirely solve the problem of some of the language of vengeance and violence contained in those old Psalms. But in many cases, it opened up a reading to a sense of all-inclusive Buddha nature. He even titled the book, "Opening to You." I left out that wherever the word God or King or Lord appears, he would substitute you. You. And that opens up a different reading of the content to an inclusivity. It includes all of us. It includes, we could say, Buddha nature. Not includes, but expresses Buddha nature. So I thought I'd read you part of Norman's version of the 98th Psalm, that same section I just read. From all the far-flung lands a shout is raised up. It breaks forth into song, it erupts into praise. We pluck your praise on the lyre with melodious song. From trumpet and cornet a blast bursts out for you. Let the sea and all within it thunder, the world and all of life. Let rivers clap their hands and mountains kick their heels at your presence. For you are coming to awaken all, to establish justice and harmony everywhere. So he means, like you, us. Let rivers clap their hands and mountains kick their heels at your presence. That made me think, that made me remember Dogen's Mountains and Rivers Sutra. Some of you know it. Dogen, the founder of Soto Zen in Japan. And he wrote about a kind of reciprocal delight between mountains and sages, the sages who live in them. He wrote, although mountains belong to the nation, mountains belong to people who love them. When mountains love their master, such a virtuous sage or wise person enters the mountains. Since mountains belong to the sages and wise people living there, trees and rocks become abundant and birds and animals are inspired. This is so because the sages and wise people extend their virtue. Know for a fact that mountains are fond of wise people and sages. People wouldn't put it quite that way now. We don't like to anthropomorphize mountains. Animals, let alone mountains. And yet, he's describing the reciprocality that is the truth of our existence. We're not mountain sages. We live in a distracting urban environment of sensory overload. So how can we wish joy to the whole world without limit? Well, by slowing down, by not multitasking, by paying attention in our daily life, knowing when we're contracting in self-defense, because we do, of course we do, you know, long habits, you know, habit patterns have accrued. But knowing, being aware, and releasing whatever little bit we can by opening our sense gates to the world and receiving the gifts of wonder and connection that are actually all around us right now. And then by sharing those moments with a friend or a stranger, or if you're by yourself, make a poem or a painting or a prayer and share it later when you have a chance. Here's how the American poet Stanley Kunitz described that. And he was a devoted gardener and poet who lived to be about 101, I think. Yeah, like those old Chinese Zen masters we were talking about. The round. Light splashed this morning on the shell pink anemones, swaying on their tall stems, down blue spiked veronica, light flowed in rivulets, over the humps of the honeybees. This morning I saw a light kiss the silk of the roses in their second flowering, my late bloomers flushed with their brandy. A curious gladness shook me. So I have shut the doors of my house, so I have trudged downstairs to my cell, so I am sitting in semi-dark, hunched over my desk, with nothing for a view to tempt me but a bloated compost heap, steamy old stink pile under my window. And I pick my notebook up and I start to read aloud the still wet words I scribbled on the blotted page. Light splashed. I can scarcely wait till tomorrow, when a new life begins for me, as it does each day, as it does each day. So when I announced the title of this talk last Sunday here, someone said, are we going to sing the song? Yes, we are, but not the one you think. The country singer Hoyt Axton wrote another song called Joy to the World, made famous by the rock band Three Dog Night long ago. 1971. And I have taken the liberty of rewriting some of the lyrics. If you know the chorus, it will date you. But please sing along, whether or not you know it. And bear with me. I haven't practiced much. Jeremiah was a bullfrog, was a good friend of mine. We used to sit beside the pond and meditate, and one day he taught me this song. And it was a mighty fine song, and he sang, joy to the world, all the boys and girls. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Joy to you and me. It's not going a little higher. Once he said, if I were a Buddha, tell you what I'd do. I'd throw away the cars and the bars and the wars, and love the plants and animals too. Joy to the world, all the boys and girls. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Ah, joy to you and me. You know I love the forest, the trees and the rivers too. I'm a high life flyer and a rainbow rider and a rockin' bodhisattva too. So I'm a rockin' bodhisattva too. Joy to the world, all the boys and girls. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Joy to you and me once more. Joy to the world, all the boys and girls. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Joy to you and me. Joy to you and me. Joy to you and me. Thank you. Okay, let's do the closing chant.
Page 3.